You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. They're not called the Miracle Mets for nothing. The franchise defined ineptitude since its birth in 1962, losing 100 or more games their first four seasons. In 1968, they had their best year, 73 wins, 89 losses. Then came 1969, the inexplicable. In a year, man walked on the moon. Suddenly, the Mets were in their first pennant race, but on August 13th, they were 9.5 games out of first place. Then they caught fire, winning 38 of their final 49 games. That included one on September 15th in St. Louis. Steve Carlton would turn in what at the time was the greatest single strikeout performance in Major League history. He struck out 19 batters and lost 4-3. Thanks to a two-run homer in the fourth inning and another in the eighth inning by our guest, Ron Swoboda, was one of Destiny's darlings. And Ron, you were. This was yet another sign of destiny.
Yeah, I think destiny's a good word. Things kept happening that, we looked at one another and went, is this really going on with everything that was happening in the world? And you mentioned the moon launch, and we were taking off in September like the Saturn V. I mean, we were going and winning three out of four games in a run that we needed to have to catch and pass the Cubs.
And 3 days earlier, a doubleheader in Pittsburgh in which the Mets won both games 1-0 and 1-0, and the pitchers drove in both runs. Now, Don Cardwell was acknowledged to be quite a good hitter for a pitcher, but at the time, Jerry Kuzman was a horrible hitter, and yet he drove in a run, and the Mets won both of those games. This was another sign before your game.
Well, yeah. And you know, I mean, I think those are two of the most wondrous wins of the year because, you know, we got pitched against pretty well. We still were not an offense that caused any pause for anybody, But to have a doubleheader come down like that, you felt like you could win any game anyway.
Mm. And 38 wins in the last 49 games is extraordinary, and it seemed as if every single game the Mets got good pitching.
Well, you know, when you got Seaver, Kuzman, Gentry, Cardwell, and the bullpen, Taylor, Tug McGraw, Nolan Ryan was on that team as a spot starter. You could go to him. Jim McAndrew had a very good second half. We were a five-man rotation, and the Cubs were a four-man rotation. And they were playing us straight up all the way, and it felt very much like, for a long time that we were going to be the pumpkin in somebody else's Cinderella story. And somehow, they hit a skid, and it went from, I think it was 10 days where they went from five up to five down, and we caught them and passed them, and that was the end of it.
Chasing a Chicago Cubs team with Hall of Famer Ron Santo, Hall of Famer Billy Williams, Hall of Famer Ernie Banks, Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins. What a team.
Yeah. But only one of those guys you mentioned pitched, and
right.
and as I mentioned, their bullpen was Phil Regan and not much else.
Right.
And Leo DeRocher, who probably thought he invented baseball, went with that. They never really had a solid center fielder. We had Tommy Agee and Cleon Jones and me and Art Shamsky in right field for the most part. We platooned and we were fresh and young, and they were not young anymore. And they were playing their starters every day. And I think back before they put lights up in Wrigley, that September was warm. And I think, I think in the process, they melted down.
Mm. Tom Seaver from August 9th to the end of the season won 10 straight. Jerry Kuzman, the number two starter, who on a lot of other teams, Ron, would have been the number one starter, he won 8 of his last 9 games.
Yeah, I mean, and those guys both had, you know, Kuzi had a problem under his arm. It was a knotted up muscle that he went through a period where he couldn't throw. Can you imagine not having him?
Wow.
Seaver had a little bump, but not much. But Seaver had a little bump in the road, a little shoulder problem, I think, that straightened out. You know, when you look back at those things, you go, wow, what if? But to have those two guys back to back, you just couldn't lose a lot of games in a row when they were rolling, because you needed, if you got two or three runs, you felt like you might be good.
One of the seminal moments in the history of the franchise, and I know that's a mouthful, but I think it's true, was importing Gil Hodges from the Washington Senators to be the manager of the Mets. And under his first in his first season in 1968, they went, as I mentioned in the open, they went 73-89, the best in franchise history. And there's a story, and you were there, that in 1969 in spring training, he gathered the team together and said, "We'll play 500 ball," when nobody in the world could have imagined anything like that. Tell us about spring training and the lead-in into the season, what the expectations were with you guys, not with anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, when you've never been there, when you've never been relevant, okay, I came in 65 with Casey Stengel, and me and Tug McGraw and Crane Poole were there, and, you know, we're looking around like we're seeing this pitching staff develop. And you're thinking, yeah, 500, that would be nice. I don't know how we get there, but that would be nice. That would be a nice step forward. And that's really, all anybody was thinking after you had won 70 some, and you know, he didn't lay any expectations on us that were unrealistic. So it was really the perfect way to go into it. And you know, I'll tell you, Hodges' handle on that particular team could not have been better.
Mm.
We were the guys that provided him with some of the buttons to push. He was a guy who would use some pretty novel ideas when he needed them, bringing in an outfielder to play infield in a right situation, put four outfielders out there in a situation, that called for it. It was straightforward, but pretty interesting and creative, but understandable by everybody on the club. And so he didn't dazzle you like a Gene Mock with myriad nuance that sometimes you didn't get. You know, when you manage above a team's head, sometimes you lose them.
Hmm.
Hodges never did that.
Ron Swoboda with us. You started your major league career, you just mentioned him, in 1965, playing for Casey Stengel, who never pronounced your last name properly. He called you Swoboda. And he
didn't have a W in it for him.
Right, didn't have a W in it. Right. It was the shortened version of Swoboda. And he used to tell the press, this is a young man that can hit home runs over tall buildings.
Well, you know, I certainly gave everybody the impression that I might have something special in terms of power, but what I never came up with was the discipline and understanding of the mechanics of hitting, and consequently, the numbers say I'm a .242 hitter with occasional power.
Give us your history against Steve Carlton before that memorable night.
You know, I got a little base hit here and there, but who liked to face Steve Carlton? Although, here's a strange thing. If you go back and look at some of the games when Carlton was pitching for the Cardinals, he lost some games and gave up some hits to some people that shouldn't have beat him. I remember Kenny Holtzman one time, not a bad hitting pitcher for the Cubs. I remember watching a game and in a key situation. I think it was bases loaded or something like that. You got the pitcher up, two outs, and Holtzman gets a base hit double or something down the left field line. And I'm like, you should that should never happen to you. And it seemed like Carlton could let those things happen to him. When he got over to the Phillies and came up with that taekwondo and that sort of martial arts level of discipline, he didn't make those mistakes anymore.
That night, he's trying to throw fastballs past you, and you got him twice.
Well, I hit a fastball first time, and the second time I hit a slider. And it's funny, it went over that, you know, it went over the wall, just barely skimmed over the wall in left field. And it was a pretty good pitch. I remember to this day, I don't know how I got to it. It was in on me. It had some movement, and somehow I got my hands through and the head of the bat on it. And, I mean, I hit a bolt to left field. And I had two strikes on me. I struck out twice, so I was 2 of the 19, and I had two strikes on me when I hit each of the home runs.
Right, and when you weren't hitting the home runs, he was striking out the whole house.
Yeah, Bob Gibson one time, I would get upset when I struck out. I don't care whether it was him or Carlton or, you know, who knows who, but Bob Gibson said, how can you get so upset? How can you get all upset when you strike out? You do it so much.
Ron Swoboda is with us. We're talking about the great comeback of the New York Mets, the great September comeback in which they won 38 of their last 49 games. And on September 15th in St. Louis in 1969, Swoboda got Carlton twice, two two-run home runs on a night in which Carlton otherwise struck out 19 batters. And Ron, on a night in which the game was not telecast locally back to New York.
It was not telecast anywhere. And yeah, that was, you know, that doesn't happen now in this age of every pitch, every play, every game. And I went to the post-game interview with Harry Carey, and who's sitting in the room looking like somebody just told him his dog got run over by a car, but Steve Carlton.
Oh, no.
He was interviewing him too. Why not?
Of course, it was a historic performance, but a little odd. Was there any conversation between the two of you?
I don't recall a conversation. I felt pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, I bet you did.
I mean, but here's another thing, though, Ed. Think about this. You go back and look at big strikeout performances by pitchers, and see what the rest of the game looked like, because, you know, of course, in this day and age when, you know, strikeouts are up and players don't seem to take a two-strike approach, and it seems to be fine with everybody. But back then, you know, a strikeout was, you know, you were trying not to. But I don't think, you know, there's still only one out. You know, a strikeout's not a double play. It's just an out. And, you know, it doesn't determine what happens the rest of the time at all. And I think you could go back, if you really did deep research, you'd find out there weren't as many wins in big strikeout games as you would imagine.
Mm.
It ain't a lock.
That's a very good point. You win 38 out of your last 49 because, let's face it, you're fresher than the Cubs, who were playing 81 home games in the searing heat in Wrigley Field. Randy Hundley, the catcher, caught a ridiculous number of games. I think it was about 150.
Yep.
Whereas when you guys came to the ballpark, very few guys were playing every day. Jerry Grody catching, Bud Harrelson at shortstop, Cleon Jones in left field, Tommy Agee in center were the only everyday players. Everybody else were platoons, including yourself.
Well, and I remember one of those games when Grody didn't catch and in a doubleheader at Wrigley, and it was a hot summer day, and you know, he ended up leaving the game with heat prostrations. This is a guy that, you know, we didn't play there. But day ball in Chicago in September was was hell. Mm. You know, we lose a catcher early in a game when we're trying to rest our catcher. Imagine if you're the guy, Hundley, who's catching every game.
Right. But what was the reaction of the players that were being platooned, like yourself with Art Chamsky?
Well, I think, look, you know, Sham hit 300 that year, or very close to it. So he probably felt like every time I was in there, it should have been him. You know? But between us, we drove in 100 runs. And back then, that was pretty good performance. And don't forget, you had a little bit of Rod Gasper out there, little bit of Amos Otis. You know, everybody forgets Amos Otis was on that 69 team early.
Right.
And, you know, Hodges really wanted him to be a third baseman, but Amos wanted nothing to do with that. And they made a, you know, what turned out to be a horrible deal with Kansas City, bringing over Joe Foy the next year. And Joe was a disaster. Wonderful guy.
But a
horrible
lot of personal,
drug problem.
Yeah, personal problems.
It flared up. But I mean, Amos Otis went on to become an all-star.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure at the time they're looking at Cleon Jones and A.G. and me and veteran guys out there. And Otis, you know, didn't show them in a considerable amount of at-bats, by the way. You know, he got some chances. They were trying to figure out if he could play early on in that season.
Hmm. 9 days after your historic performance against Carlton and the Cardinals and his 19 strikeouts, the Mets, in the first year of divisional play, clinch the division. They're going to the playoffs.
That was heavy.
It was heavy. And just
that's a 1969 word too.
Yeah,
I think
that's fine. And it was that is heavy. That's right. That's a 1969 word. But it was just an incredible run to the clinching on September 24th against the Cardinals at Old Shea Stadium.
Yeah, I remember that. And you know, it was the team. You know, the Cardinals had been bubbling around with the Cubs, you know, we were always conscious of playing the Cardinals. Always a good organization, never a bad team.
And coming off two straight World Series
year,
performances,
it seems like that's somebody the Mets need to beat for that last playoff spot. But yeah, it was probably the easiest baseball I ever played in my life. It was heady. It was exciting. It constantly fed your juices. You felt like you couldn't wait to get to the ballpark and see what was going to happen tonight.
Speaking of the current Mets, what are your thoughts?
Man, I'll tell you what, I think it's one of the most interesting runs because, you know, when everything works and you've got Harvey and Matt and all those guys are clicking, and you're thinking, well, you ought to win it. You got the best pitching rotation. And then all of a sudden you don't. And now you got to figure out some alternatives and they're doing it so far. And I think it's an amazing job by Collins. I think his handling of this team and the way they've responded, the minor leaguers that have come up and played, just last night, TJ Rivera, what a performance. Here's a guy that, you know, is 27 years old. He's a minor leaguer for most of his, until this season. You're asking guys to step up in the middle of you know, in these, you know, you don't know if you have all of DeGrom, but you're going to have to make it work somehow. I think the schedule favors the Mets, but you can't depend on that.
No. Last thing. What's the legacy of that run to the playoffs? 38 wins in the last 49 games.
Well, you know what? Your career and you know, and your time on any team is a segment of the whole. And I rejoice in my heart when I think of how lucky I was to be a part of this bunch of guys who came roaring out of the weeds from nowhere, really, and put together that run and it was clearly, you know, you didn't need Gil giving us clubhouse speeches in how to hang in there. And I don't mean to, you know, to knock any of that. It's just that once you've learned, we could play everybody. Once you know you can play everybody, and you go out there and this thing is so new and you are sneaking up on people. And by the time we got as good as we were, it was too late for anybody to catch us. That was the best and easiest and most, you were surfing on top of the wave, man. You were on the big one. You were in the curl, man, and here you go. It was pretty amazing, and to have been a part of that is wondrous in my mind, and I would wish that for every Mets team, including 2016.
And let us also remember, won the Eastern Division of the National League by 8 games.
Yeah,
and 100 wins.
When we rolled, you know, I think everybody was pointing towards, you know, our last series of the regular season was in Chicago, and everybody was thinking, you know, if you were a Cub fan, you were like, hey, get them in here within reach, you know. Get them in Chicago within reach, and let's see, because we played incredible games with the Cubs that year. None of those games were decided easily. They were pretty intense and broke on small events, you know. And I think Chicago, we went into Chicago, and somebody had. Must have had 50 yards of funeral crepe, purple crepe that they threw over the dugout. We had to walk out through this funeral crepe. Well, of course, that was all planned ahead of time, and, you know, with the idea that we would have, you know, given up the lead to the Cubs again, it didn't happen. We went in there, and it was already decided, so we were like, you guys have all the fun you want with that crepe. We're going to the playoffs. What are you guys doing?
Ron, thanks so much for being with me. Always a joy. So,
same here, Ed.
So that'll
always
do it.
I will see you before this season is over.
I look forward to that. So that'll do it for Ron Swoboda and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.